So I'm standing in between you and lunch, so feel free to leave when you get hungry. And also, please feel free to ask questions at any time. Put your hand up and I'll address things. Also, if anyone's got their laptop open, which I'm sure everybody has, and are not listening to the talk, my build is broken right now, so whoever broke it, please fix it by the time I sit down and you know I can type configure and make again. I'll be very happy. Okay, so my name is Jeremy Allison, Samba team member. I'm sorry?
Works for me.
Okay, well, I'll have to take a look later. Do a git clean and then try it. Okay, I'll take a look at that later. My name is Jeremy Allison, one of the original Samba team people, and also I work for Google in the open source programs office. And so what I'd like to talk about today is, this is not a terribly technical talk. In fact, it's not really a technical talk at all. I can drill down into some technical areas if people have got questions. But it's mainly about how you would actually use Samba in a particular situation, which is not necessarily deploying Samba as an administrator on a network, but if you were actually trying to make some money out of Samba and put it into a product, what are the problems and pitfalls and advantages that you might get for actually using Samba if you're going to try and essentially productize it, which is something that we don't actually often talk about very much. You know, we talk about the technologies inside Samba, we talk about using it in administration, but we don't often talk about, well, so you've got this thing, how would I actually use it, and how could I use it if my main purpose was to actually build something to sell to people? So, first of all, let's take a step back and say what Samba actually is. Well, it's a lot of stuff. I mean, you have to remember there's nearly 20 years of development behind this code, and it's a big pile of stuff. And so the first thing it came out, as you said, it was a file server and print server. So we now actually support four variants. We have SMB SIFs, what I like to call POSIX SIFs, which is the Unix extensions. And we also now have SMB2, which will be feature complete in master and in a testing state by the end of this month. So I was wondering whether I could risk it and turn SMB2 on by default in the very next release, but the Debian guys basically said, no, that's way too aggressive, shut up, leave it as an option. So the release after that, I'm going to do it. We'll have SMB2. The other thing it is a clustered file server, which in the SMB and SIFS world is actually quite rare. It's one of the few implementations that actually clusters correctly. The nice thing about it is that there are, I must qualify that, there are many clustered file servers that do SMB and SIFS. This is the only one that's only available in public source code, publicly available open source code, that you can build on top of clustered file systems like Red Hat's GFS, the Oracle one, whose name I can't remember right now. OCFS, thank you, and various others. And there's another one, which, again, I can't remember. There's lots of them, but it's quite a hot area right now. It's also the original NetBIOS over TCP, as we've just seen, single sign-on, an AD server, and the old NT domain code, LDAP, Kerberos. It's a big bag of stuff. Also, we actually have a quite interesting spin-off library development from Samba. And these are things that basically Tridge invented because he needed them, usually. And they've been turned into some very nice technologies which are available for use, which have been turned into libraries shipped commonly with many Linux distributions. And at some point, I do plan to give a talk, probably not for this Samba XP, about the spin-off libraries that are being used and what they are and how to use them. Because there's some incredibly useful technologies that sort of fall out of Samba in Tridge's wake. There's a sort of a large cruise ship going along, sort of throws food over the side. And these smaller fish sort of gobble it up. So we have a wonderful memory allocator, Talloc. We have two sets of databases, the original TDB and then the LDB, the LDAP variant of it. The clustering CTDB, which is actually, I'm not crediting Rich for all this stuff, Volker wrote and designed a great deal of. And now we have the, also Volker mainly and Metz inspired the asynchronous event library T event, which is what the new SMB2 code in Stanbury is based on. Okay, again, started out as Tridges, but you guys finished it, so I'm going to give you the credits, okay? it was just an idea scribbled on the back of a bar napkin one night for Tridge, and you know, you guys turned it into code. So, and then the other pieces, they're not commonly thought of as part of Samba, but they actually kind of originated here, are the Linux kernel client code, and I can claim that because both Steve and Jeff are now Samba team members, so. Even though that's not how it started, I'm claiming your stuff anyway as part of Samba, which is the Linux kernel SIFS client. And right now, Steve and Jeff are arguing viciously about how to do SMB2, and there's some code. And we will lock them in a room, and you know, two coders enter, one coder will leave, bearing an SMB2 implementation, which is under development. So what is Samba? Many people think of it as a product. In fact, you know, for a while, people were sort of shipping, you know, the badged Samba. When I was at SGI, we actually had a sort of a Samba for RX official product. You could get manuals, you could get CDs. We even had to have a T-shirt. It's not as nice as the new team ones, but we had a T-shirt and a sweatshirt and everything. So is it that, or is it a big box of Lego that people can assemble things out of? And that's kind of an interesting tension when you're developing it. Am I developing a product that is finished that people are going to sort of type a, install from a one-click installer? Or am I just spinning off technologies that people are going to use to create other things? Well, the answer to that, of course, is yes. It's really what it is you want it to be and how you want to use it. And so I prefer to think of Samba, being an old astrophysicist by training, as a spectrum with absorption lines. So it's actually a range of solutions. And depending on what you want to do is how you want to treat the code. So the easiest way is to essentially treat it as a product that you just get off the shelf and it's, hey, it's a file server. Right, I need a file server. Here we are. It's plug and play, just kind of works, except when it doesn't, but it just mostly kind of works. You integrate it into your code, your product, and that's it, you're done. Hey, we have one of those, put the checkbox on the marketing slide. For other people, they like that aspect of it, but there's just a few things it doesn't quite do that they need it to do. They want to integrate with some piece of technology they already have, they want to bend it in such a way that, you know, that doesn't fit into the nice framework of the soap powder box. And for them, it's kind of a semi-customizable thing. And then on the other end, for the people, and this is usually for people who are building very advanced products, very high-end file servers or whatever, it's simply a kit of parts. They're the people who've got the Lego set out there on the carpet and they're building stuff with it and they don't really care. We've got one of these, we don't need that. Here's a bit here we can plug in. And you can build an amazing range of solutions with this code. So let's look at and I'm very, like I say, I'm broadly categorizing here about the three sets of users. It is a full spectrum where you can sort of take one piece or all of it or none of it, really. So the plug-and-play users, they are mainly the embedded people. Samba turns up in some really funny places. I bought a media server to play my videos off a Samba server. And, you know, I'm playing this thing happily. I've got it in the house for a couple of months. And I happen to bring up a network browser, and I find that my media server is advertising shares. I'm like, what? It doesn't have anything on there. And so I take a look inside, and it's embedded Linux, and there's a Samba file server on there that kind of got turned on. You know, so it's not a primary use of the product, but it's it's a feature that people want. They throw it in there. It's nice to have. So like I say, media players, some people have added Samba to gateway boxes. And then there's the guys who basically sell a, you know, a bump in the USB wire, sort of a USB connector at one side and an Ethernet port at the other. Then inside there's a tiny embedded Linux and Samba. To be honest, those guys, you know, they're selling this thing for 15 cents and it falls out of your breakfast cereal. Those guys don't really want to put a lot of development effort into it. They just want something, hey, we have a file server, plug it in, you know, we're done. And those guys, I mean, they usually, we don't normally hear from those people. We probably should. It would help them if they did talk to us. But normally, Samba, you just find Samba in various products. It just kind of turns up. And so that's the plug and play guys. The mid-level users in those, I kind of categorize the Linux distributions and the Unix distributions. Now, that's not all of them, and many of them are very high-end, sophisticated users as well. So this is where the lines start to blur a little bit. So I categorize those people as people for whom interoperability with Windows isn't what they're selling, but it's an important piece that they have to have. So most of those guys, they ship some version of the straight Samba file server. The GNOME and the KDE guys fall into this category, for instance. What they're shipping is a desktop, but what they need is the ability to show remote files on a Windows share. So they use libsmb client. And then, of course, all of those guys use, because it's part of the Linux kernel, they use Steve and Jeff's SIFS VFS kernel client. So there's other kind of mid-level users, and these are kind of the mid-range NAS vendors. I'm not going to mention any in particular, but there's quite a lot of these guys. So these guys, file-serving, being a member server, doing authentication and integration there, it's an important part of the product, but it's not everything. So, you know, they use Samba, they have requirements for Samba or something similar. It's more closely to their core business. But it's not completely what they sell. They're usually selling ease of use, really. So these are the guys where you buy a set of big disks that they've got some RAID configuration for you, and it's like, put all your movie files on here kind of thing. So these guys, they often have custom versions of Samba, which they maintain outside of samba.org. They have separate source trees with separate patches. Sometimes they send the patches back, sometimes they don't. They fix their own bugs, and they have at least one person on staff whose job it is to make Samba work in their product. And so they're actually pretty good to work with. They'll sort of triage bugs for us. They'll usually report things back to the Samba Bugzilla, although some people like to contact us directly. And they usually have a relationship, or maybe one Samba team member on the team. And then there's the real high-end users. And we know who they are because we work for them, usually. So these guys require very, very customized versions of Samba, very tightly integrated with other code that may or may not be proprietary. They have very customized needs. So I'm talking here about the high-end clustered NAS servers, the really high-end NAS servers, some print servers, some of the WAN acceleration guys, people who want Active Directory domain service, which is obviously a new part of the product we're coming out with. And then, of course, there's secret projects. And I work for Google, so I could tell you about them, but then I would have to open the gas canisters and put my gas mask on and an evil laugh. And so yes, I won't tell you about those. Now, most of the real high-end users, we work for them. I mean, you're actually looking at a representative of the very high-end users in the room. They drive the long-term development of the product, really. I mean, we're the ones who create new features. And also, we tend to have the most interesting, in quotes, legal and licensing issues, which means that all of us end up talking with lawyers a lot more than we'd really like to. So, this happened to me a few years ago outside in that room there. I was drinking coffee, and somebody came up to me and said, you know, I'm really surprised. You've got the reputation of being a completely rabid bunch of free software zealots. Yeah, you're some of the most business-friendly open source people I've ever met. Whoever does your PR sucks. And I said, thank you, that would be me. So I shan't name that person, but yes, that was an interesting wake-up. It's probably the antitrust case in Europe did that to us, but, well, it was worth it. So many of these people have that impression because they're like, whoa, Samba went to GPO V3, they're free software people, you know, you can't talk to those people, they're crazies. So I want to say something about proprietary code. So we actually work with many, many people who have pieces of proprietary code. And, you know, we don't use it. I'm not speaking for everyone on the team, but personally, and I think sort of the philosophy of the project is that this is not something that we will ever do. Our goal is to increase the use of free software everywhere. But we're not actively hostile. The worst we're going to do is tease you about the development problems that proprietary code has. Talking to people, we have yet to find someone whose proprietary stack couldn't work with us if they were willing to actually help integrate Samba into it. That's not to say there aren't people who've looked at Samba and said, no, I can't use that because it's going to mean more changes than I'm comfortable with and I have these proprietary pieces I need to keep. So essentially, they have to look at the costs and, you know, the benefit that they get out of it. So there are some people for whom, you know, developing their own, buying an off-the-shelf server is easier for them because it means they have to do less code changes. But I haven't seen anything that is actually impossible for us to really work with. And I want to stress this. We are willing to change our code to aid integration with proprietary code. And this is something that most people don't realize. Having said that, and this is a really, really important if, it has to be an improvement for our code. So if you come in and say, well, I could use Samba if you would just restructure things so that, you know, every packet was, let's just come up with something, every packet was a separate, fought a separate process and did this because I can't link with that, then we would basically say, no, go away, buy something else, use something else. But if you come and say, you know, I have this proprietary piece I'd like to use with you guys, but the way you've structured this code is a real problem. Hey, maybe if we restructured it like this, it would be better for you. You would have a better library, a better interface, you know. And as a byproduct, that's going to help my integration work. That we're extremely happy with and extremely friendly with. And, you know, we'll actually try and work and help people develop solutions like that. So let's go on to the fun part of the talk, which is the horror stories from the past. So there are many people who've used Samba and have failed spectacularly. And I'm not going to mention any specific names. There are people in the room who know who the specific names are, but we're not going to point out the guilty. We can just have a bit of a laugh. So how to fail spectacularly using Samba in a product? Well, the first thing to do is never let anyone know who you are. Remain anonymous at all costs. That way, you appear like a random user on the list. And you know how much attention they get when they say, hey, my browsing doesn't work. So there's been OEMs in the past who basically, they always use anonymous Gmail, Yahoo, or Hotmail accounts because they're hiding it. Their use is too secret for anyone to know. And so they'll post problems that they're having with their specific implementations or pieces of code that no one else has, of course. And so they don't bother filing a bug report. They just put up a random, hey, this doesn't work on the Samba mailing list. And, of course, you know, everyone goes, oh, that's weird, delete. The other one is obviously, if it's a problem that they're having with their implementation of Samba or their integration, it's got to be a common bug. I mean, hey, after all, we're having this problem, you know, even though, let's say, we're using security equals share with a custom-written password backend and Windows Vista won't talk to it. Well, that must be a common bug. Everyone must be getting that. So we'll just put it on the list and see if anyone notices. So they don't submit bug reports because they're frightened or whatever. So surely somebody's going to notice this. It's so important to us. And the other way to fail is never talk to the team directly, because after all, they're only the people who wrote the code. What do they know? We'll get Samba embedded in a product of a chain of three or more OEMs. So we'll buy something that was outsourced from something that, and I'm not trying to knock Taiwan here, but it normally ends up with some unnamed OEM in Taiwan who integrated a bunch of stuff and resold it to somebody. So yes, these are ways not to actually succeed and end up thinking, God, this free software stuff sucks. Other things that people are guilty of in the past. Well, that stuff's all free anyway, so this licensing thing, we can ignore that. Nobody's going to care about that, after all. So, you know, they just kind of like, well, licensing, yeah, we'll deal with that later. Let's get that product out of the door. And so, you know, this is actually probably one of the common ways that you find Samba turning up in these weird boxes that don't even mention source or have no offer for source or, you know. Excuse me, there are various people who make it their business sort of, SEMO actually, talking with those vendors to let's just say, help educate them. And as I said, if I was to point at one real specific issue, it's not talking to the people who develop the code because, you know, well, our stuff is different. You know, they're never going to understand what we need. They're all communists anyway, so, you know, let's just use this stuff on the quiet. And the other one that actually people tend to have a problem with, because they'll prototype something with Samba, they'll get it working, they'll make the changes that they need to, and then we do a major version upgrade. And they're like, oh, well, we really wanted SMB 2, but we built everything on Samba 3.0, and it's all tied into there, and we have a boatload of changes that now no longer apply. So feeding back your changes. How hard could it be to forward port that stuff anyway? It's not like the code is changing very much after all. So having pointed out some of the horror stories, let's talk about what it actually means to be successful and how to build successful products. So talk to us. We love you. As I said, despite our very fearsome reputation, we're very business-friendly. You know, if you think about it, this is a business for us. We make our living doing this stuff. Yes, we also do it for fun, and, you know, I will spend evenings and weekends hacking on Samba after my four-year-old has gone to sleep, but it really is, it's an economic activity. Almost all of us make our living doing some kind of economic activity around Samba. And yes, as I said, the worst we're going to do is tease you about closed source software. This is our software. This is what we believe. We are not going to knock on the door with a pamphlet and say, hi, may I talk to you about free software? There are other people who do that very effectively, and that's kind of not us. So the other thing is I want to point out is that the license, people fear the licensing because, hey, it's that GPL stuff, it's weird. But it, actually complying with it is extremely easy. And if you talk to us early enough, we will help you comply with the license to do exactly what you need with the software. And a caveat there, of course, because there have been people in the past who basically what they wanted to do with the software was rip it off, put their own copyright on it, and resell it. And so, yes, we're not going to help you do that. Unless what you want to do is, like I say, violate a license and rip us off. So how does this work? What should you do? So first of all, talk to us. We have all email addresses. I'm usually the primary contact. Let us know that you exist. You're looking at Samba. We've usually heard many of the requirements before. I really love it when somebody comes up with a novel use of Samba, but it's actually quite rare these days. And, you know, if you come to us and say we want to do this, it may be that we already know that's not going to work and we can save you a bunch of time wasting and say, nope, go talk to someone else. Samba isn't for you. This really isn't going to work. So we can help you make that decision early so you don't waste time. And It's obviously it's easier if you're in Silicon Valley, but even if you're not, we do phone calls with people, and we can, you know, we're happy to spend some time, not infinite amounts of time, but we're happy to spend time talking to people who want to use Samba in productization and work out what it is that you need and how we can help. And yes, even though I hate to admit it, I have signed NDAs. So it is possible. Normally, I usually say, look, if you've got anything that's really secret, just don't tell me. But, you know, if people really push, I have signed those in the past. And like I say, decide how you think you're going to use Samba, where you fit. The next thing I would say is look at the licensing. So it's GPLv3, new, scary, of course, in 10 years' time, if GPLv4 is being prepared, everyone will be saying sort of, oh, this new license is horrible and scary, not like that well-understood, friendly GPLv3 that everyone uses, which is exactly what happened with the GPLv2 and GPLv3. And so lawyers, especially for your business, they don't like talking to engineers because we smell and we're grubby and we don't understand them. They like talking to lawyers. We have lawyers. We have good lawyers. And they live at softwarefreedom.org. And they are very happy to talk to other people's lawyers. And they speak the code that lawyers understand. So having said that, really the easiest way to comply is just ship the source. And some people like, hey, we're selling a NAS box. It's got disk in it. Why not have a partition that when we ship it out the factory has a source code on it? And the users can delete it if they want. The other issue that is new with the GPLv3 is to allow users, if you're going to have a product that's updatable, and this is not legal advice, read the license, talk to lawyers, etc., but allow your users to update versions. If you can update the software, allow your users to update it in the same way. And that's a sticking point for a lot of vendors until they realize that, wait a minute, if the user updates it, that doesn't mean we have to support it. We can explicitly say if the user updates their version of Samba, then they're out of support and we don't have to talk to them anymore. So, and that usually cheers them up. Because nobody wants to spend 3 years debugging a problem only to find that someone had hacked the code and messed with it. So you've got some proprietary value-added code and you want to interface it with Samba. How do I do that? Well, easiest way, just stick it in the kernel. Everyone has a kernel. You're running on top of something. It's probably Linux or even Windows. We have people using the Samba code on Windows. Just stick your value add in the kernel. At that point, it's out of our way. We don't care about it. We can also interface with user space code. It's a little harder because of linking requirements. But we have VFS modules, and it's a reasonably easy way to... You may have to structure your code a little differently. You may have to use process separation. But again, this is doable. And again, if you take one thing away from this talk, talk to us. We can help advise how you might want to do that. So step 4, work out how much of a Samba expert you want to be. So some people will sort of hire consulting in the past. And there's many people in this room who will offer consulting experience. And they can customize any part of the code for you. Other companies, and this has actually worked really well in the past, have essentially said to some of their engineers, we want you to become Samba team members, and you know, you have 2 years to do it, and some part of your performance review is based on doing that. And that has actually worked. There's nothing, it does incent people to actually try and do some good work and help the project out. And of course, what usually happens to those people is they become Samba team members first and members of individual companies later. So the other thing is, that's how we colonized IBM. It was by stealth. Plan to integrate changes back. I think that's pretty important. You can bear a custom set of patches for a while, but eventually, as Trish pointed out, with the development rate we had, it's going to hurt in the end. Step 5, technical support. Everybody's going to need it. I don't care who you are. Everybody needs some help. You know, even companies that employ large numbers of Samba team members have problems with areas of the code that those team members didn't write, don't know anything about, and don't want to know anything about. And that's usually when you have to talk to Gunther, because it's always the printing code. that I'm talking about here. So you can kind of do it yourself, and you can ask questions on Xamarin Technical or the IRC channel. I don't put the IRC channel up here because I'm old, and you kids get off my lawn. So I like email. Or you can, as I said, hire a consulting company or a Linux distro or a secondary OEM and actually have them take care of interfacing with problems with the code. And here's another horror story. Windows Vista ships and somebody's NAS box simply stops working. And they never tested it and for various other reasons. They had a critical support issue. Help, what do we do? But what do critical support issues usually look like? Well, is it safe? Security. So a lot of the issues that people worry about with using open source code is, well, that stuff's open. What if somebody does a zero day? They're going to kill us. You know, our product will die. So this is the classic one. It's a Friday afternoon, and some, if you'll pardon my words, absolute bastard posts a YouTube video saying, oh, look, here's a zero-day exploit with some hideous background music. And yes, this happened to us. I don't believe it was, but it got a lot of coverage. So first of all, we take security very seriously. And we, as you'll notice by the accents of the team, there is always someone awake monitoring security.samba.org. And yes, I've been woken up in the middle of the night saying, we have a problem, which is never the kind of... Whenever you get a call at 3 a.m., it's always bad. It's either a wrong number, a stalker, or whatever, or someone's found a security hole. It's never a good thing to get a call at 3 a.m. But it happens, and we wake up, and we deal with it. We coordinate with VendorSec. We get, cert numbers? Is it cert numbers? Yeah, for all our security issues. CVE, thank you. You can track them. Essentially, there's an entire infrastructure in place for dealing with security issues, and Samba is part of that. So, yes, we've had many security bugs over the years, and I can say that because many of them were mine, unfortunately. But what I would argue is the bugs, yes, obviously, they're important. Yes, we hate them. There's nothing worse than that knotted feeling in the pit of your stomach while you're trying to find out whether it's your fault or you can blame it on someone else. But what really matters is how fast you respond and how accurately and how good the patch is. And I think our record really speaks for itself in that case. So the very early days of Samba, Tridge doesn't remember this, but I remember this very, very well. So to give you an idea of the attitude around Samba to security, in the very early days of Samba, somebody posted on the mailing list, and I think it was sort of like a Saturday afternoon Tridge's time, oh, look, here's a completely exploitable root zero-day root exploit against Samba, and he posted this to Samba, the entire mailing list. And I think Tridge happened to be up at the time and monitoring it and decided that the very next post on the list was going to be a fix. And I think it took him about half an hour, but he actually managed it. The very next post on the list was, thank you for reporting the problem. Here is your patch. Now, these days, the security issues are usually somewhat more complex, somewhat more subtle, and we have to coordinate with everybody producing products and vendor sets. So, you know, even though we produced the patch in half an hour and have tested it, it might take several weeks for it to actually find its way to go through everybody's QA processes to get into actual distributions and come out as a security patch. But the other advantage of talking to the team is if we know about you and we know what code revision you're running, if we have an internal security problem that's reported to us on security.samba.org, we will notify you privately. So you'll get a heads up. It won't be a... If people practice responsible disclosure, which is to inform the vendor, then we will inform people using Samba in a product before the news becomes public so that you can actually prepare a patch. So It's our conference, goddammit, and I can advertise, so I'm going to. So this is probably the only advert slide, really. So why work with us? So really, the reason I would say to work with us is that the technologies that we implement, A, they're horribly complicated, and very few people other than the people in this room and developers really care about them that much. They're usually not the core competency of a company. They want to do some new widget or some new file system, or that's the value add. It's not really, you know, implementing an SMB2 authentication Active Directory server. That's usually not the product. That's something that it's nice to have. You need the completeness of your product, but it's actually not something that you want to develop. And you know, I'm going to set our stall out here and say I would say that we have more experience in some of these things than anyone that you're going to find outside of Redmond. And especially for SMB1, I hope you don't mind me being cheeky in saying, I would go so far as to say more than anyone in Redmond as well. Or at least the people still working for Microsoft. That's not to say that Microsoft, you know, didn't develop these things and have people who knew them better than we did. It's just that because they were working for Microsoft early on, all of those people have retired and are now going on round-the-world cruises on their own private yachts rather than working on the SMB code. And we're still doing it because we're dumb. But it is fun. So, sorry for the hideous US cultural reference, but so I don't want to work with Samba. What? Me? Worry? I don't want to do this. You've made the wrong choice, but that can happen to anyone. So even if you decide to do something else, or you're buying a product from a third-party vendor that's implementing the same technologies, I would still argue that talking to us is a pretty good idea, mainly to use SMB Torture and the client libraries to actually test whatever solution it is that you're putting into your product. Because, you know, the people who are competing with you commercially will be doing this, and their salespeople may just show up with a set of SMB Torture results and go, ooh, look. But they would have to be able to do that. And the other thing that it's handy to keep an eye on what we're doing is just to keep an eye on what it is that we're up to, and B, to find out if we find any issues with some of the protocols or new tests. Kind of the Samba community is kind of a hotbed of development around these issues. So even if you're doing everything yourself or buying from a different third-party vendor, it's a good idea to be here and communicate and collaborate. And that's it, I think. So I'm kind of done just in time for lunch. So does anyone have any specific questions or comments or...
Jeremy, it's really great that you are putting that message out, but who's going to carry the message to the actual OEM vendors? What group of people?
So the question is, yes, that's great, but you're talking to the converted. Good point. So we really need to market these features of Samba better. And so I'm hoping that people here, the Samba users, contributors, and developers, you can take this slide. This is an open source set of slides. And you can essentially try and spread this message out to the people that you come into contact with. And I've also submitted this talk to the SNEA Storage Developers Conference. And the economy must be picking up again because my travel schedule is going insane. So, you know, I will try and bring this message out whenever I can. And if you are, you know, a Samba user or advocate and you want to help Samba, then the fact that Samba is friendly to business is probably something that I think it would be very good to do. And also, this, you know, commercial companies...
maybe the website relaunch will, whatever... Maybe we have the chance to put in something like, okay, different users of Samba go here.
Yeah, that's a good point. Now that we're relaunching the website, which is a really nice job, by the way. I didn't have a chance to reply in the email, but if you haven't seen it yet, I don't know when it's going to go live, but it's very, very nice.
It's live.
oh, it's live, woohoo, we have a new website. We've now come out of the 1970s, as Volker said, so you no longer have to sort of mail in a card to get a web request and get back a brochure in the post with Samba on it. I'm hoping that people here will be able to go out and inform people that they work with that talking to us is a good idea, and communicating with us, and point out some of the features that I've mentioned in this talk. So, Chris.
If anyone here has contacts in Asia, any of the companies that are producing SIFS products in China and Taiwan and all through the Asian area, encouraging them to show up at this event and also at the SNIA Storage Developers Conference, SIFS Pogfest, would be fantastic, because I think that's where we're going to get the most traction, especially for SMB1.
Right. So Chris's comment is a lot of the OEMs and people that we need to talk to are actually based out of Asia. And so, you know, I travel a lot. I will probably end up in China so either sometime this year or next year. If anyone has any good ideas for conferences that I should go to speak to get this community, I can get this thing translated into Chinese pretty damn easy. So. For various personal reasons. So, even though I can't give the talk in Chinese. Yeah.
Jeremy, would you mind commenting about commercial support for Samba?
Yes, thank you. So we have a commercial support section on the website, which had kind of fallen into disrepair. And I'm going to point out, thank you for reminding me, John. John has done a great job in actually tidying that up. And in a very fair way, because it's very hard to do that in a fair way, and I think John has done a sterling job of it. He's updated it. He's pruned the people who were there who no longer answer the phone or have moved addresses or whatever. So that section of the website should be much more accurate, up to date, and John is maintaining it and will take changes to it and is updating the companies who want to be on there. Any other questions or comments, or is everybody hung? Oh, Bridge, yes.
One more comment about contributing. So Jeremy's slide about how you can get involved and contribute. Some of us have started using a new trick on you. And this new trick is that when people come onto the IRC channel and they say, how do I do this? And sometimes I answer saying, well, I'll give you the answer as long as you promise to add it to the wiki. And we then give them edit rights on the wiki. And if you want edit rights on the wiki, just ask. Yelmer or myself or Metz or many other team members can give you edit rights. And so we then give them a detailed answer and we explain it in great detail how to do it. And then we expect the person receiving the answer to create a wiki page. And some of the wiki pages we've got out of that have been spectacularly good. People putting screenshots and detailed scenarios and all the setup and all the config and everything. So if you get hit by that, if you get asked, that's why we're doing it, because we're trying to get the users more involved in advancing the technical knowledge of how to use and deploy Samba.
Thank you very much for that. I just want to make a quick comment. That's a really good point, and is a slide that I will add to the deck for the next time I give this talk. But historically, Our internal perspective has been, we've done the code, we're finished. And of course, that's really not the case. You know, the fact that DC Promo now works, and you can do this two-way replication, unless people actually know about it, it's useless. So that's actually an excellent point. Trying to make the wiki the center of Samba documentation and getting the information out there of what Samba can and will do is I'm going to add that to the slides, and the next time I give this, I'll try and persuade people to do that. Yeah, question.
I know the wiki for years, but I don't know what is the real state of the wiki. I know the how-tos, they're often outdated, and so on. When I do some work inside of the wiki, I don't know what is the leading system. Is it the wiki, the how-tos, the mailing list, the chat? What is it? Please explain it. I do nothing inside of the wiki. I have an account for 3 years, but I don't know what is the status. Where should I do the changes? Inside of the wikis, I had some ideas about the wikis, but alone I could do nothing.
Yes. So I'm going to let Trey answer that, because the wiki is something that...
You're right that historically the wiki has often been a something that bit rots fairly quickly. Now, what I've been doing lately, I've been doing a lot of wiki pages in the last year or so, and I've generally put a version of Samba up the top, tested with the following version, tested on the following date. And so you'll see at the top of the Samba 4 how-to wiki page, it will say, this was tested with the following release, you need Git version from this day or later. And it was retested. Andrew Barth and myself have been regularly retesting every step in the wiki. But you're still correct that then the mailing list and IRC, there's so many source of information, you can drown. And the best way to stop yourself from drowning is if you think that you're not sure which one is the one that's right, ask on either the IRC or the mailing list and ask us to clarify what you need to know.
So can I make another comment?
I know the IRC. And when I go into the I don't want to use a technical IRC because I'm not a developer. I'm a user. I'm an administrator. When I go into the normal IRC, they are all beginners. It makes no sense. Inside of the technical, I'm only reading because I'm not a developer. And when I write down something in the mailing list, often I didn't get an answer. I know I'm not a developer. I don't speak your language. I'm a German native speaker. It isn't easy to say, okay, I want to do this. And when we want to do something inside of the wiki, let's say we need a team to say, okay, this is for developers and this is for end users. There must be a decision.
I don't have an easy answer for that. And one of the problems is the number of people who are available as resources to answer questions, for example, in the original hash Samba channel, and the same as the original Samba mailing list. We are a small team that is trying to do a big job, and we're reliant upon the community to be self-supporting in some ways. We're reliant upon when there is a lack in an area, if there isn't sufficient, you know, information for people who aren't technical experts in the area, that somebody steps up and fills that role and solves the problem. And that doesn't always happen. And we can't always make it happen because we all get thousands of emails every week. We all get, you know, we're all working from early in the morning till late at night. And there just aren't more hours in the day for us to also do all of the technical support. So we are reliant on other people in this room stepping forward and putting a bit of time into helping out other users at a less technical level. So there is no easy answer to this. And we do recognise it as being a problem. And some Samba team members make a point of trying to be in hash Samba whenever possible and make a point of being on the Samba mailing list and answering questions. But I don't. I used to. But I no longer have the time to do that. And so I'm now relying on other people taking on that role, and other people also run out of time. So it's the perennial problem you have with projects like this. We're a victim of our own success, and there's so many people who need to be able to ask these questions. So all we can do is we can rely on you to give us feedback that something is lacking. Don't be afraid to say that our documentation isn't good enough, that you find it confusing. That's a bug. If the documentation is not easy enough for you to understand, that's a bug. And you need to report it as a bug. I couldn't follow that. I couldn't understand that. It was too technical. And you can report that bug in the Bugzilla. You can report that the wiki is not understandable to a beginner as a Bugzilla bug, which we should address. Yeah. And then we have to look at that and address it, you know, because we're supposed to be trying to help users like you solve their problems.
So, Trich, can I make a comment there? So using the Bugzilla is an absolutely wonderful idea. Remember, I get emailed from every time Bugzilla gets updated, so I know about it then. Bugzilla updates to the docs are very welcome. Patches can be pasted into the docs. And the other thing I want to mention is Trigi is right. We are a victim of our own success in that there is an immense amount of outdated, unclear, and incorrect information out there. Possibly in the source tree, but we can do something about that. The problem with the World Wide Web is, of course, that A, it sucks, and B, it lives forever. So once something is posted on someone's blog of a website on how they had to, let's say, tweak the TCP receive size to mention one of my favorite, one of my pet hates, that never, ever goes away. And this code is nearing 20 years old. And so the only thing I would ask people in this room is, if you know better, one of the things I think we'll take away from this is we need to decide that we have one authoritative source of information, and that's probably going to be the wiki, and that's where it should be. And at that point, if people see outdated information in mailing lists, in websites, in SMB.com files shipped by vendors, which also propagate some of these horrors, then point this out, and we can try and get that fixed. And I think we'll probably have to discuss this on Samba Technical, but the wiki is almost certainly the correct place for the documentation to be kept current, up-to-date, and accurate. So, yeah.
I just want to remember that for people that really need support, there are also companies that can give you just normal consultancy.
Yes.
So if you really have a pressing issue, you can go there too. There are people that are in contact with Samba team members. So if they realize that even them do not understand how to resolve a problem, they have a privileged channel. So that's also another source.
Yeah, Seymour's point is there are consulting companies out there that will give support. This is not necessarily a sort of user support talk. This is more about talking to OEMs and people using Samba in a product. But there are paid resources available. So you are not entirely on your own. If you have money to throw at the problem, and, you know, well, if you're willing to throw money at the problem, there are definitely paid resources that will help you fix the issues. And now that John has done a great job on the consultancy website, that should hopefully that will be kept maintained and be a lot more useful to people. Yeah. Any other questions? Or all right. Well, thank you very much, and let's have some lunch.